It's time for Cover 2 Broncos. Just a couple dudes breaking down scheme, film, and the numbers. Now, your host, Joe Rowles.
Welcome back to another episode of Cover 2 Broncos. This is an episode I have been looking forward to for a couple weeks now, honestly. Kind of ever since I got to talk to Zach Hicks and AJ Schulte in the preseason, I've kind of been looking forward to talk to you guys again. Listeners, dear listeners, if you guys do not already follow them on Twitter, Zach is the lead analyst for Sports Illustrated's Colts coverage. He also does Broncos breakdowns of their film on Mile High Huddle. And he also is a contributor to Cover 1. You can find him on Twitter at Zach Hicks 2. And it's H-I-C-K-S 2. And you can also find AJ on Twitter at AJ Draft Scout. His writing, to the best of my knowledge, tell me if I'm wrong, AJ, is over at Mile High Report.
Yep, that's right.
Cool. And he actually just did a piece. He kind of got ahead of me on this, so it helped me inspire me. But you actually wrote a piece today about if the Broncos should trade Kyle Fuller. I think we'll get to that in a second. Because the first thing I really want to kind of just throw out to start where we're at is, so the Broncos are 3-2. They beat up on three kind of nobodies to start, you know, to be kind. And then they've kind of they lost to what looks like a Super Bowl contending Ravens team. Let's be real. But then they dropped the ball against Pittsburgh, in my opinion. That's where I kind of land on them. But what do you guys think about this? They're 3-2. Are they pretenders? Are they for real? We don't know. What are you guys thinking with stuff right now?
I mean, AJ, you can go first if you want through there.
Yeah. To me, it still kind of feels like they have the ability to make the playoffs and contend. It's just it's been like some really suspect kind of here and there in the injuries right now. But when as the season moves on and these guys start coming back healthy, you know, I mean, we'll find out here in the next few weeks how the Broncos can contend really moving. But I like their chances. This AFC, out of everybody that's not a lock, it kind of feels like it's their show if they just kind of play like they should be playing. And they didn't against Pittsburgh. They started off just really slow. The play calling was weird. Those first two drives have been just beaten to bits on Twitter right now. But I think if they can figure it out and play the way they should be, I think they can contend for the playoffs.
Where do you land on them, though, Zach? I know, again, like, you fall really closely with the Colts, and believe it or not, because of the AFC South and the kind of the state they're in, the Colts technically are still in it. Like, they're definitely still in the playoff hunt as well. And AJ alluded to the fact that there's some locks, and again, like, I know we're only hitting week six, but it does look like the AFC playoff picture, yes, it's wide open in terms of, like, who is where, but, like, I would be floored at this point, barring, you know, significant injury, if Buffalo doesn't make it, if Baltimore doesn't make it. We basically have to count on the Chargers making it at this point because they've already beaten two other teams in the AFC West, including the Chiefs. And then, obviously, either the Titans or the Colts are going to win the AFC South. So those four spots look like pretty close to locked up. And then the AFC North is so good. I would bet on either the Ravens or the Browns making the division or one of them making the wild card.
Yeah, no, it's tough. And it's, you know, the way that you pose the question is, are the Broncos for real? Are they pretenders? I think it's kind of tough. They're kind of in that, like, they're competing for a wild card spot at this point, because we can all say that they're not going to beat out the Chargers for the division. They're not going to beat out the Chiefs for the division either. So they are competing for kind of that third spot in a very good division. This is a very good division. I mean, even the Raiders are a decent team despite all the turmoil that's going on there. But the biggest thing is they are really competing for that bottom edge playoff spot. And you're kind of in that place where you never really want to be, because your defense isn't dominant enough to win with an offense that isn't top tier. And again, your offense isn't top tier, so it's not going to propel your team forward. But right now, you know, I think we saw them. We saw a lot of good things in those first three games, albeit against really, really bad teams. The Ravens game, you can kind of excuse that a bit. Your quarterback got hurt. It's against a top team in the AFC. But like you said, they dropped the ball this past weekend. And I think we're going to find out in this next game really what this team is about. You know, you have a very, very, very winnable game against the Raiders. I mean, the Raiders are going through some massive turmoil right now with their head coach resigning earlier this week. They're a team that hasn't been great the last couple of weeks either. They just had a really awful game that they just lost. Derek Carr did not look like Derek Carr at all in that one. So you really need to capitalize on this game if you want to have a chance at making these playoffs. Because if you drop this game, right after that you get the Cleveland Browns, and if you're not, you know, that's going to be a tough game to win. So going, if you drop this game, your season looks a lot more bleak. So we're going to find out pretty much this next week, you know, should we care about this Broncos team? Do we think they're a playoff team going forward? Because if they drop this game against the Raiders, there's really no excuse.
No. And after losing the Steelers game, in my opinion, this Raiders game is as close to a must-win game as you can get this early in the season, just because if they want to actually chase the playoffs, knowing that they have 4 days to turn around and then play the Browns, you really needed to win both the Steelers game and the Raiders game for me to feel good about the playoff chances. Because right now, basically, I would say it's about a coin flip. They need to beat every team that they should beat, and then they need to be able to compete with the heavyweights. Like, even if they don't win all of them, like, realistically, you know, obviously they're not going to beat every single one of them, but they can't just not show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got 4 games against the Chargers and Chiefs down the stretch as well, along with the Browns this week. I mean, those are tough, tough, tough games.
They still have the Browns, they have the Cowboys, and then they have the Bengals. And again, like, I did not expect the Bengals to look as good as they do. And maybe they kind of fall off as, you know, the year progresses. We don't know yet. Probably. But they look, I would say they look better than the Broncos have the last 2 weeks for sure. So if you guys didn't hear that, AJ has a fire alarm, so he's checking on that really quick. But no, I just
scared the crap out of me.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on. But I would just say though, like, you have the Raiders, and again, like, the way this all went down, and again, like, as soon as I heard what happened with Gruden, I was calling for Gruden to resign. So I don't want to bog you guys down with that, but like, the right thing happened. I was kind of surprised and obviously a bit disappointed that he even coached this last week.
That was
weird.
Man. I mean,
it's
that,
a weird situation that played out like that.
It's predictable with the NFL. It's what the NFL does. I mean, if this other stuff didn't come out over the weekend, he would still be the coach. Like, and after what he said about the NFLPA guy, is it DeMaurice Smith? I want to say his name correctly. I think. Yeah. So it's just how the NFL rolls, and that's just what they would do. They would have let him keep coaching if it weren't for the extra stuff that came out. But once it all came out in its entirety, he was, you know, asked to resign. It's awful, man. It's awful that there's people out there that are like that. And rightfully, he's no longer part of the NFL. And even, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers took him out of the Ring of Honor as well.
And from a competitive standpoint, though, it's actually really weird for the Broncos going into this game because, like, John Gruden is one of the better play callers in the league, or he was one of the better play callers in the league. There's little doubt in my mind of that. And the way he was mixing personnel makes it really hard to prepare for. And he's had Fangio's number over the last couple of years. He finds ways to create offense against the Fangio defense, even when Fangio had Bradley Chubb and Von Miller in the same game. So, like, the fact that they lost him should theoretically help the Broncos quite a bit, if, even, like, beyond the actual turmoil part of it, because that'll probably be a factor as well. But here's the kind of the sneaky part of this is the fact that, like, the Raiders players may very well take all this and kind of, it might be a bit of a rallying point. And I know that sounds like kind of like soft, but like that kind of stuff does happen. And the other part of this that, like, we can't really underrate, we have to kind of like accept it for what it is. They're unpredictable. You don't know what the game management's going to look like now. They may be very, very aggressive. They may be not, you know, we don't know. And also the play calling tendencies, all of a sudden, all that film you have on them, yes, that's the same personnel, but how they call plays and when they call plays, that's out the window. And so they could be hard to prepare for.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, Greg Olsen, I think, is our offensive coordinator now. He's going to be their play caller. He didn't have the greatest run in Jacksonville. I'm very familiar with that. I think that's right around the time I started getting into more of the Colts coverage and such. So I think that is a much, much easier to game plan for than John Gruden's offense that he would call. But yeah, like you said, this could be a game where the Raiders want to come out and kind of step up. I think it's going to be a game where the Raiders, as players and their team, comes out early with a lot of energy and a lot of, you know, it's going to be a quick punch early. And if the Broncos can survive that quick punch, I think they can win this game for sure. I mean, they're the much more talented team when it comes to this matchup. But yeah, man, it could be a game where it's kind of like a trap game where the Raiders players and their new coaches kind of surprise us a little bit.
Are there any Oh, go ahead.
I'm back. But the other thing to keep in mind is the Raiders, if they feel like this is a game that they need to kind of rally, and they could be dangerous. You know, they'll be aggressive on fourth down. They'll be pulling out the stops just because they need this win to move forward. And you know, if that's the case, the Denver's got to be ready, because you can't go in and just run pass and not be ready on fourth down. If it's short, they'll be like, let's just go for it. And why not? What have we got to lose after this huge scandal game?
How do you feel about the Broncos matchups with the Raiders? Like, if we take out the game plan and the kind of the unpredictability of it, like, how do you actually feel about the matchups based on, like, what we've all kind of seen? And I'm going to admit, like, I've watched a lot of broadcast tape over the last 3 days because I'm still having some issues with Game Pass. Thanks, NFL, for completely screwing me, but that's just kind of how it is. But I have watched as much as I could of them. I mean, Darren Waller, this is one of those games where I'm glad Ronald Darby's back. We don't know if Ronald Darby's going to be healthy enough to play the whole game. But this is the first game where, if Ronald Darby had not gotten hurt, this is the game where we could have seen a lot of dime, because it would have made sense to have Patrick Surtain on Darren Waller as much as you could. Because especially now that Josie Jewell's hurt, and again, I'm not saying Josie Jewell one-on-one with Waller is good, but Justin Cernod, there is a fall off there. And I think fans didn't expect that because Cernod's a better athlete. And again, we've all kind of been saying this for a minute. Athleticism doesn't make everything with a linebacker. So this last game against the Steelers is the first game that really kind of showed up where Cernod, his processing is a little bit slower. And again, he's inexperienced. Like, this isn't, I'm not trying to bury him, but his processing isn't quite as fast as Josie Jewell's is. He's not quite as good a run defender. And he can be had by misdirection. And I think the Raiders offense is going to try and do that.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, the worrying bit for me is if Kyle Fuller draws Henry Ruggs, because Kyle Fuller, the deep bombs have been just killing him. I mean, we saw it in the Steelers game with Ben Roethlisberger that, quite frankly, we didn't think could make those throws. And Henry Ruggs is just ridiculous deep. He's been so good for them. That to me is my biggest worry, just because Kyle Fuller last couple of games, I don't know if the long one to Deontay Johnson was necessarily a coverage bust, like he's expecting safety help or not, but yeah, that's worrying. I mean, he's covering short and intermediate well. It's the deep bombs have just been killing him. And if the offense isn't clicking enough, that can break him.
And what's concerning to me about that is from the beginning of the season till now, teams have been trying to dial that up. So it's something that teams knew was going to be exploitable. And teams have done a good job of using Fangio's cover four and cover six rules against him by using a number two receiver that runs vertical enough to occupy the safety, which ends up leaving Kyle Fuller one-on-one. The Raiders are going to be able to do that. That's been on tape. It's on Fangio and it's on Fuller to like make it sure it's not effective, because Carr can hit that reliably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny. On paper, the Broncos do match up well with this Raiders offense, you know, probably better than most teams. They have good pass rushers, you know, Malik Reed and Von Miller, very, very good pass rushers. They have the interior guys that can at least stand up against this run game. And makes some things hard in the run game for the Raiders. And then they obviously have the cornerback depth that, you know, Kyle Fuller has not been Kyle Fuller, but he's still been fine for the most part. You know, better than a lot of teams' corners. Then you got Ronald Darby coming back. You got Surtain. Bryce Callahan's had a really, really good season, I think. And then your safety play has been, I think, pretty good too. They do have the personnel to match up with the Raiders better than most teams. But it is like what AJ was saying, what you guys have been saying, is that deep ball is going to be a threat. Ruggs is a different animal when it comes to getting down the field. And I know the Raiders don't target that a ton, but they do send Ruggs down there quite a bit. So if there are opportunities to hit him, they won't hesitate and they will get the ball, especially, you know, we don't know how this new offensive coordinator is going to do things, or, you know, how Carr is going to react to having a new offensive coordinator. Maybe he'll let the ball rip a little bit more. I don't know. I mean, we've seen a lot of Carr throughout his career, so maybe we kind of do know what he is at this point. But, you know, if he gets those one-on-one opportunities with Fuller down the field, I can definitely see him taking some chances. Because, again, we said this game could be a game where the Raiders feel like it's like their last shot of the season and they have to make a big statement. So that is definitely the biggest concern. But on paper, you know, it's hard to definitely cover Waller. It's hard to cover Ruggs. Hard to cover Renfro even. Renfro's been very good this year. But I think the Broncos match up much, much better than most teams do against this team. It's just if those guys step up, perform on Sunday.
Yeah. What kind of surprising to me is, like, on paper, the Broncos, I think they're fourth in yards per game to allow to tight ends. Now, granted, you know, they've not played a Darren Waller type. So, I mean, but the DVOA is also, I think, like seventh or eighth. Which you'd like to see, especially with Josie Jewell out. But to me, this is a game where Von Miller probably just he's gonna have to go off. But they have Brandon Parker out there at right tackle.
Yep, and
Brandon Parker was not good last week against Chicago. Like, he had like four or five penalties. I think it was five pressures. I want to say, and like Von Miller's got to step up. We know how Derek Carr does it.
Yeah, and that's one. Go ahead.
This is a winnable game for this defense, and I'm really excited to see Draymond versus Alex Leatherwood on the inside. I think that'll be an interesting matchup.
I'm excited to see Draymond against anybody at this point. He's been awesome this year. Yeah. He has been so good this year.
So good.
One of the funny things about Draymond Jones to me is how those of us who watch a lot of tape love him. Basically, anybody who's like looking at the box score is like, what are you guys on? Because I don't see it. Because like sacks, pressures, like they don't show up. Like he's not like generating actual tallied stats. But I agree with you guys. Like Draymond's burst off the snap is fun to watch. Like, you know, the hashtag fun to watch stuff. But I also agree with AJ, like the way Parker looked, if they're rolling him back out there and the Broncos don't abuse him, I think at that point we do have to kind of wonder if this isn't necessarily – because after the Jaguars game, after the Jets game, basically everybody was running out to say Vaughn is back to 2019 Vaughn. And again, I'm as guilty of it as everybody else. That 29 the Jets game, the way he bent around I want to say it was Carter – bent around the chip block by Carter to get to Zach Wilson was just – it was fun. It was cool. It was really – it was vintage Vaughn. But the last 2 weeks – I expected him to do more in the Pittsburgh game. And again, part of that was Ben getting the ball out pretty quick, but not always. Like, he was in the pocket a decent bit. So, and again, I'm not trying to say Vaughn is washed or anything. I'm not, you know, running to do the Twitter overreaction by any means, but this is one of those games where Vaughn should dominate.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just love watching. I love when watching Yell 22 and getting the sideline view and right when the ball is snapped, pressing pause, Draymond's off the ball and nobody else has even moved. Like,
yep,
that kind of stuff. I mean, we saw in the Jets game, he was just wrecking their run game.
Yeah.
And that's not going to count in his stats and pressures and whatnot. But when you're driving the right guard back 4 or 5 yards, cause you catch him off the snap and you disrupt the rushing lanes for that running back, especially in that kind of offense, that's kind of the whole, I remember that ESPN guy who was like, Aaron Donald's a bad run defender for doing the same thing, but he was just clogging up lanes and letting other people come in and clean up and making it easier for them. So, I wrote a couple weeks ago about how Draymond's being unsung, and because he's doing a lot of work for the team that doesn't show up.
He is. I would say at this point pretty confidently that he's the Broncos' best defensive tackle. And I like Shelby Harris, so I'm not trying to like, you know, throw shade on him by any means, but Draymond, the skill set is there for Draymond to like really blow up. We're just kind of waiting for it to happen in terms of like numbers and stuff. How do you guys feel about the Broncos offense? Because I know that has been the thing that's been the most under fire for the last 3 days. And again, I will take some credit for this because again, I don't want to say like over, you know, I don't want to overstate it, but I called out Pat Shurmur after the Ravens game because I thought Pat Shurmur blew it in the Ravens game. And I don't think it got better in the Pittsburgh game. And again, I'm not the guy saying go fire Pat Shurmur, because I don't think firing him right now and pushing Mike Munchak into OC or pushing Zach Azani into OC, I don't think that helps the problem. I think right now what you're doing is then you're giving him an extra hat, and then like, oh shit, why is our wide receiver, why are they not performing now? Because all of a sudden the wide receiver coach is doing too much. So I don't believe that that's necessarily the issue, but I do think Pat Shurmur, he should be under scrutiny after the last 2 weeks. That's my
opinion. Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of fans don't understand that you can criticize without all of a sudden jumping to fire everybody. You know, like there's ways that you can actually talk about these things and be like, look, the first 3 weeks I thought Shurmur had a really good game plan.
Same.
Against bad defenses, bad teams, but I think he played a lot into Teddy Bridgewater's strengths. I think he did a lot of good things. And as a result, the offense was clicking. And you know, some of the red zone stuff wasn't amazing, but for the most part, I think they did a great job in those first three games. Now, these last 2 weeks against very, very different defenses, very different teams, it just hasn't been the same. You know, at times going away from the run too much, at times going too much to the run. You know, it seems like the play calling situationally has been bad. It's not getting Teddy Bridgewater into a comfortable place when he's played. Definitely didn't get Drew Lock into a comfortable place when he played last week. And that's not me saying that Drew Lock would have been great if it was, but you know, it was just the play calling has just been an issue. And I think that's honestly been the biggest issue these last 2 weeks is I still think Bridgewater's been fine for the most part when he's had the chances to make things happen. He's kind of been the Bridgewater from the first 3 weeks, just put into against tougher defenses and with play calling that hasn't been really helping him. So yeah, I think Shurmur, I think this next game is another one where it's like for Shurmur, this is just a really big one where we're going to be able to see kind of what we're getting from him this year, because, you know, great first three weeks, but these last two games when it really mattered, it's been not where it needs to be. So when you get this game that's, like you said, kind of a must win early in the season, you have to come out fire and you have to, you know, do things that you were doing in those first three games. We can't have another repeat performance like the last 2 weeks. So I think that's been the biggest issue. The offensive line, obviously, we could talk about as well. But I know AJ could talk a lot about the offensive line. He's done a lot of film work on that. But that's my biggest thing. As someone who's watched Teddy Bridgewater exclusively this year, I've done probably film on Bridgewater, I think, 4 of the 5 weeks or 3 of the 5 weeks. I still think he's the same Teddy Bridgewater. He looks exactly the same. He's still doing Teddy Bridgewater things. The biggest thing is just the play calling and the situation and the teams they're playing against.
Yeah, and for me, I'm wondering how much this offense is really missing KJ Hamler, because they don't have that guy vertically.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen it the last couple of weeks. Defenses have just not cared about deep shots and stretching the field. They are coming up against this Broncos offense, and it's on to Shurmur to call plays and to take advantage of that, and it's just not happening. The strange part for me was why it took him so long to sign John Brown.
Yeah.
Like, yep. That doesn't really make sense to me.
Nope.
Because they could have used him last week. They could have used him easily in that game against Pittsburgh.
I would say if they were going to use 11 personnel, 3 receiver sets for listeners on 70% of their offensive snaps like they did the last 2 weeks, I don't know why they didn't sign John Brown 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Like, I like Hinton as for what he is as a special teamer. But come on, like, who is he really threatening out there if you're a defense, you know?
Yeah, Deontay Spencer. Like, why? What? That one bugged me. That was a little... Like, you'd think with Noah Fant and the way that the offense was clicking early in 12 personnel and heavier looks, you'd think with the amount of wide receiver injuries that they would shift into that and exploit those mismatches, and they just didn't. Like, Noah Fant was used more as a blocker than as a receiver in that Pittsburgh game.
Yep.
And I get it, because TJ Watt is really good, but you lose the advantage of Noah Fant out there in space.
I don't get why, because in the Baltimore game, Alberto was still healthy. So like that mm-hmm. wasn't like there is literally no excuse for going with 11 as much as they did, because David Moore was coming off of signing on Tuesday. He played minimal snaps and then they just threw Kendall Hinton out there. And again, like you said, Zach, I like Kendall Hinton a lot. I'm really glad he's making it in the league at this point.
Yeah.
But he's a depth receiver. He's not a guy you want playing 70% of the snaps. And so, like, at some point, like, you should probably look in the mirror and say, why am I not adjusting to what I have in front of me in terms of personnel? And that's honestly my biggest critique of Shermer, more than the running game stuff. And again, like, I was early on, I said that the Broncos were running ineffectively. And that's true. Like, they were. And now it almost feels like I've rubber banded and said, like, now it seems like they're not running in the right situations. Yeah. I don't necessarily think you need to give Melvin Gordon the ball 30 times, but when you go to the red zone 11 times and you throw a pass 10 of those times, like, there's something going on there that's wrong, especially when you look at the numbers. And by DVOA, the Broncos have the fourth worst red zone offense in the NFL right now. It's every bit as ugly as that number looks. Like, it's, they've been completely ineffective once they get into the 20. Some of it's turnover, stuff like that. But the play calling in Pittsburgh was just brutal in the red zone. Yeah. It's a lot of isolation routes. They didn't do enough to give Teddy good looks. It was just literally asking him to throw jump balls to somebody. And that's not, first of all, that's not Teddy's game. So, like, that's a problem. But second of all, like, the red zone is where the play caller has to do the work to help someone get open, because there's not enough space for guys to just create separation on their own. And that's honestly always been my biggest critique of Shermer's offense, is his offense over relies on the wide receiver creating separation. He doesn't do enough to help them create separation. And that's showing up this year because we don't have Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah. But say your separators are hurt right now. Hamler's hurt. Jeudy is hurt. Yep. Sutton is a very good receiver. Like, he's still kind of dealing with some injury stuff, but, like, Sutton's a very good receiver, but he's not a separator. He's never been that. He's never been, like, you know, if you had to put him with Jeudy, he doesn't hold a candle to Jeudy as a separator. So losing Jeudy, losing Hamler, and then you're not using your tight ends well these last couple weeks, where your tight ends are mismatches to separate, you're not going to have a bunch of guys get open. Now, John Brown, I think that signing is great. I think that's a very good signing and hopefully should fit. But yeah, it's crazy, especially, you know, kind of going backtracking a little bit, looking at that Ravens game, like what you said with the run game. We just saw on Monday night, the Ravens and Colts, the Colts were able to run pretty much at will against the Ravens, or the Colts were able to run at will against the Ravens. With any back they wanted. I think Nyheim Hines had over 5 yards of carry. Jonathan Taylor only had 3 yards of carry, but that was because he had a lot of third and one and fourth and one runs. And then Marlon Mack, I think, had like 10 yards of carry. So they were able to run with ease, and you kind of see that. And then you see going into the second half against the Ravens, Drew Lock comes in, and what do? You just throw the ball every single time. And, you know, that's just not the rest. That's not how you're going to win that game. You could have stole that game with a better game plan there in the second half, a better way to mitigate and make things easier for Drew Lock. Instead, it was just drop back, drop back, drop back. Let the Ravens tee off on a quarterback who had issues and wasn't great in the first place. And just kind of making things easy for the defense. So, yeah, the play calling, like you said, the red zone's been an issue. But just overall, these last 2 weeks has definitely looked not where it needs to be.
Yeah, for me, that red zone is where Javonte Williams should be making his money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's his bread and butter, is being able to power and being able to break through tackles. And he always finds a way to just kind of fall forward. And that's an area where he should be. And, like, in the red zone against Baltimore, they put him out wide on Patrick Queen. And granted, he won the rep because Patrick Queen couldn't cover me at this point. But, like, it was just kind of silly. Like, what was the point of putting it, you know, like, it was just strange. And they've had some really brutal penalties there, too, in the red zone. That's kind of pushed him back and made it even more difficult. But it just kind of feels like they're not living up to their potential on that side of the ball. And that kind of seems like it's on Shermer, because it's not being made easier on them.
Well, let's dive into that. Just, I don't want to, like, just sit here and just blast Shermer, but I do want to touch on this with Javonte Williams, because I do think there's a misnomer out there. And I think that we should touch on that. And I also think we should touch on the line before we kind of move to, like, the next thing I really want to talk about. One of the big issues with Javonte Williams, in my opinion, and this is something that, like, I think both of you guys scouted him coming out of North Carolina, the vision stuff. That was the big knock on Javonte Williams at North Carolina. Anybody who watched him noticed it. And again, I'm not saying that he's blind. I'm not, like, anybody, like, if you guys want, listeners, go back and read my GIF horse on him. I loved him. He was my RB1. Like, I loved him coming out. He has elite contact balance. He's very explosive. He's a well-rounded player in the fact that he's a good blocker, good hands, capable route runner. Like, basically everything you want from a running back, but his decision-making and vision is kind of shaky. You kind of hope that with reps that will improve, but also, like, when the Broncos traded up to get him, you have to think, like, do you guys have a plan to make this worth it? And through five games, I think that they don't. Like, they're not doing what they should be doing to maximize what he's good at. He was very good on gap concepts at North Carolina. The Broncos have been running him on a lot of inside zone and outside zone. Again, part of that is Melvin Gordon. That's his bread and butter, his zone plays. Melvin Gordon's quite good at inside zone. That's his staple. But the thing is, you traded up to get this guy, and he's at his best on power, on counter. Tell him where the hole is. Tell him to go run through the hole and make people look stupid. And they haven't done that. They've dialed up a lot of zone plays. And because of it, what we end up getting is Javonte Williams will have one play for 49 yards, and then he'll have six carries for 2 yards or less. And again, part of that's Javonte Williams. Like, I'm not saying that Shermer's all to blame for this, but part of this is also the way you're using it.
Yeah, you can take this, AJ.
I wrote about him after the Baltimore game. And I mean, even on the gap plays, like the big angry run that he had, that everybody was like, "Oh my God, look at Javonte Williams!" He cut back on gap.
Yep.
You're never supposed to cut. I mean, rarely, very rarely, is it better to cut back on a gap play. And if that DB wasn't Tavon Young, who's like 5'8", 180, that gets blown up in the backfield.
Probably.
And I mean, and he had a. If he follows Quinn Meinerz on the pole, he probably has one-on-one with a defensive back, and he probably wins that and scores. It's great, and it's, oh, look at his contact balance. He doesn't go down. He's so angry. But, I'm a Rams fan, and I cover them. Daryl Henderson struggled early to adjust to the Rams offense, and they went out and they drafted Cam Akers. And now sure enough, 2 or 3 years after they drafted him, Daryl Henderson has started to click and it started to come well with him. But it's 2 or 3 years later and they spent a high pick again on another running back. So it's like the leash with Javonte Williams, we don't really know, but it's not quite clicking. And if it keeps going at this rate, we're kind of like, if they want to stick with zone, because that's kind of the meta run, can they trust Javonte Williams to just get better at that? Because you really don't know.
And you can't live in a world where you carry the ball for 2 yards, 2 yards, 2 yards, 40 yards, 2 yards, 2 yards. I get that it's exciting, and from a fantasy football perspective, I love it. I have him on my fantasy team. It's great. But in terms of, like, everyone's bitching about the fact that we're ending up in these third and longs, Javonte Williams is a big part of that.
Yeah. And, you know, I've covered good running backs with Indianapolis the last couple of years. You know, Marlon Mack, 1,000-yard rusher in 2019. But coming into the NFL, he was athlete playing running back. He wasn't a running back at all. I think we scouted him coming out, all of us here. He was not what he is now. He was no vision, all athlete, could make some really cool cool plays where he made defenders miss. But he had no vision. And now we're looking now in 2021, his best trait is probably his vision. It does take running backs time to kind of build up. I mean, Jonathan Taylor last year was a 3 yards a carry running back until about week 10. And then he kind of figured it out and look. And then, obviously the Colts started doing some more duo and some more gap type stuff. And he was able to find success. But yeah, I know. I do think it's an accumulation of issues. You know, Javonte Williams, his strength in college was not his vision. And we could all say that now, especially watching this pro film. But it does kind of come down to the offensive play calling where, you know, you have this back who's more of a gap, more of a power, more of a duo type guy where that's where he's going to find success. And running him on stretch plays and inside zones where his vision is not where it needs to be for an NFL back, you're not going to find success. And now Melvin Gordon, if you want to run your stretch plays, you want to run your zone plays, get Gordon out there. You know, that's Melvin Gordon's game. He's always been that. The best thing about him has always been his vision. Very, very good vision for the most part. But Williams, you know, when you have these running backs, you have to be multiple with your run game, your run scheme. And I think your offensive lineman can handle it. It's not that difficult going from zone on one play to gap another play, power to another play. You have athletic offensive linemen who can pull and get out in front too. So I think it's just kind of right now it's a square peg in a round hole. Javonte Williams I think will be fine long term. I've seen a lot of running backs come through. I mean, Nyheim Hines is another one too, where first 2 years of his career with the Colts, he was like a 3.1, 3.2 yards per carry guy. Last year, he was 4.8 yards a carry. They take time to develop this vision and develop trust in their blockers and know where, you know, which hole to hit. But until then, you kind of got to get him in an area that's comfortable for him. And right now with Williams, that's those power runs, those gap runs. And if you're going to keep rotating these backs, you know, the defense can key that a gap is coming, but if you block it well and he's doing something that he understands, it's still going to be hard to stop. It's going to be better than what's going on right now with him running all these zone runs.
I would liken it to, like, when you have a rookie quarterback, you try and meet him halfway and try and give him the things that he's good at as much as you can, and hopefully he starts to figure out and round out his game to be able to do the whole shebang. But right now, they're not doing that.
Yeah, that's kind of why James Robinson, I think, just kind of came in so well, because he's got excellent vision. I think his vision, his decision making, and his contact balance is how he wins, and that's why he's been so successful so early on. It's that mental trait. But I think this kind of gets a little lost, and I agree with Zach long term. Like, Melvin Gordon has been playing in the NFL longer than Javonte Williams has been playing running back.
Yep.
Like that's huge. You know, he's relatively inexperienced. He only started playing it as a high school senior.
Yeah.
You know, Melvin Gordon, before Javonte was in high school, was like a Heisman running back, like a first round pick. So there's just going to be that gap between the two of them mentally. And if Javonte, I think learning behind him is huge for his development long term. But again, it's still kind of a question mark of, like, last year, I think they were fourth in gap plays. And, like, that's where Javonte Williams should be making his money.
I think so. So since we've kind of alluded to this, because I know the next kind of thing on this is, well, what about the offensive line? The offensive line's been bad. And, AJ, I know you've watched the offensive line up close quite a bit.
That's all AJ right now. I'm going to let AJ go with that, because every week he's putting in our group chat that we have about Broncos offensive line play. So yeah, that's all him.
So I want to throw a couple narratives that I've heard at you and just kind of hear what you think about it. Okay. So Garrett Bowles is an all pro. Why is he looking so bad?
That's because he's all pro. All pro voting is very bad. It's tough with Garrett Bowles, but like his hand placement and play strength has never been great. And it's showing up in 2021 again, and you're like, he's not committing as many boneheaded penalties as he was to start in Denver, but the rest of the play is kind of the same. And that to me is just brutal. I mean, I think Fangio ripped him last week after Baltimore. Yep. Like he just needs to play better. He's not playing well, and Bowles was like, yeah, I know I need to play better, but I'm like, you're almost 30 years old, man. You don't. I've never been a huge fan of Bowles as the way he plays. I just, something about it kind of rubs me the wrong way, but he does need to play better. And for some reason, like his hand usage regressing to that extent, almost across the entire offensive line, it's like they've forgotten how to use their hands and the play strength just hasn't been there. It's bizarre to me just how quickly he regressed. I mean, even week one against the Giants, who don't really have great edge rushers. He wasn't dominating like you would have expected him to.
I thought Lorenzo Carter won some of those reps for sure. And Lorenzo Carter, I like Lorenzo Carter quite a bit, but he's not a top tier edge rusher by any means.
No, I mean he primarily wins with his athleticism.
Yep.
His hand use, you know, Lorenzo Carter's hand usage just has never been there, even going back to college. But I mean, he's a heck of an athlete. We saw that Dak Prescott interception last week. You know, that's a heck of a play by him. So it's Garrett Bowles. You could do worse at left tackle. You know, it's not like Garrett Bowles is a terrible trash left tackle. You know, Zach knows what that looks like right now. But
Garoppolo's fine. He's fine.
He's fine. He's fine. He's just not being as dominant as the expectation was. And maybe those expectations were a little premature for a guy with just 1 year of relatively good play.
So the next one I want to throw at you is Graham Glasgow and Dalton Risner are garbage. I've definitely heard that quite a bit.
Risner has struggled a lot more than I thought he would. Last week he had a rep where it was on a speed rush and he stuck his hand out and it was immediately swatted down and his whole body just fell. It's typically a rep you would see any good guard recover on. But he gets swiped and he's just out of position, gives up a pressure inside. And you're like, what in the world is going on? Like, to me, and Glasgow, I think, is fine. Yeah, he's not. I know there are a lot of people that have been on board with Glasgow, and I think for the most part, I would feel more comfortable with Glasgow than Netane Moody. But Risner, for me, has been the bigger question mark. And to me, I almost wonder, just, is it time for Quinn Meinerz? Either left guard or center, because to me, I think the center position is still just a total turnstile.
But that was going to be my next one, though. Blake Cushenberry has improved in his second year, and he's a leader now.
Leader's so dumb. I hate hearing leader when it comes to football players. I hate it so much.
Didn't hear the press conferences? He's a leader now. He tries hard. And he knows all the calls, and he's in his second year, so he's better now.
I hate hearing leader. I hate it. I just hate it.
I would hope he knows all the calls by now, considering he played literally every snap last year. But like at some point, I mean, Quinn Meinerz, what was so crazy to me was in his first few games, we saw an increased awareness that we just typically don't see out of rookie offensive linemen. We know how good of an athlete Quinn Meinerz is, and we've seen him play against really good competition at the Senior Bowl, and he held up well. I mean, PFF's grades for him were low, and they were like, oh, he's so bad. But, like, he was great. And to me, I'm kind of going, when is it time? When are they finally going to put this guy in? Because I think he'd be an upgrade. I mean, he had a few rookie mistakes. That's going to happen. But by and large, I kind of felt like overall he's had the best performance of any interior offensive lineman
on
the stage in 2021.
I really liked what he did as far as picking up stunts against the Ravens. That really jumped out to me.
Those are things that make me
nervous every time teams run stunts at Risner, just because Risner's kind of hit or miss on them. If you bring speed as the looper, Risner sometimes will get stuck on the penetrator too long, and by the time he gets off the penetrator, the other guy's just going right by him. And that's been a thing for 3 years. I end up sounding like I hate on him because I've brought that up continuously, but it has been a thing. And so to see Quinn Meinerz go into that game, and again, I was very nervous because you and I disagreed about Meinerz versus Muti going into that game, AJ, and that was the primary reason, is because Meinerz had not played all of 2020. And, like, you don't see that kind of stuff on a consistent basis at the level he played at. Like, you just don't.
Yeah.
So to throw him against Wink Martindale for his first start, like, yeah, it was making me pucker a little bit. But I thought he held up.
Listen, any offensive lineman Duke works with, I'm telling you, just take him. He's going to be good. He's just going to be good. I'm going to brand the O-line masterminds. But Quinn, to me, has just – I've always loved his game. And it's really hard to not like him personality-wise. And to me, I'm really going, would he be any worse? I don't think so. I actually think he might be a little better. I think he's dominant. You saw that play strength on a few of those reps that you just didn't see from Risner. I mean, he was just dominating. I mean, there was a rep against... Was it Quinnen? I want to say it was against Quinnen Williams, where he just stoned him. Just straight up stoned him in pass pro. That's hard to do because Quinnen Williams is so dominant at the point of attack. And that was in relief game. He didn't even get the start. he just kind of casually goes out there and stones Quinnen Williams. Like, yeah, play the kid. Play him.
I don't want to get us too dragged into Bobby Massey, but I got to bring up Bobby Massey because he's the only guy we haven't touched on. So I want to throw the narrative that I throw out to people, and you can tell me how wrong I am or how I'm kind of close to the ballpark. So I would say that Bobby Massey is probably the Broncos' best right tackle since the Peyton Manning era. But I also would say that that says more about what the Broncos have had at right tackle as much as Bobby Massey. I think Bobby Massey is probably about average. Some matchups he's okay. Some matchups he's bad. He's kind of like you shrug your shoulders and it's like, hopefully they draft somebody because at some point you need to fix that spot for real.
Yeah. To me, like, I can't remember who, I think they had Elijah Wilkinson and Dotson last year.
Yep.
And I don't know previously because last year was the only Broncos tape that I really got into, but like, he's just kind of there, you know, he's not trash, but he's not exactly good or great. He's an average right tackle, which they knew he would be when they signed him. You know, you're just kind of hoping he doesn't get whooped up on every rep, which he doesn't. Owe got him pretty significantly.
Yeah,
he had a few rough reps against Pittsburgh, but you know, a lot of elite right tackles struggle with TJ Watt too.
Yeah.
So, but you know, we kind of knew what he would be when they signed him, and that's kind of what he's been, and that's okay.
And so that kind of brings me to like the main, because again, like you look at some of the numbers, Teddy Bridgewater, according to Pro Football Reference, and again, like I don't know how I feel about their charting yet. Like I have to kind of like I don't normally pay attention to their advanced charting, but I did see it. According to them, Teddy Bridgewater has been under pressure, I want to say on 32.3% of his snaps. That's a lot. Some of that is the play action stuff that they were using the first 3 weeks is going to draw pressure. Like you're drawing people coming down against the run and then they just continue to rush. Some of it is teams are, you know, sending heat, but also that's a lot. That's a pretty high number. And that was one of those things I was really concerned about with Teddy Bridgewater going into better competition. Is that if they can't do something about the pressure, it's only a matter of time before Bridgewater starts to regress because you can't perform at that level consistently under duress every play.
The scary part would be like, what will Drew Lock look under those numbers?
Oh God, I don't.
You know, but I also feel like Teddy, not to say that he invites pressure, but there are a lot of reps where he is going through his reads.
Yep.
It's not a one read look often. And so like, yeah, he's going to be a little more under pressure because he's taking deeper shots than we thought he would. It's not the ball's out in 2 seconds. It's not a Ben Roethlisberger looking offense. It's he's going 1, 2, 3 and maybe even 4 on a few reps. And that's just going to happen with pressure. Yes. The offensive line could play better, but yeah, that's just kind of the way. And Teddy's a pocket guy. And he thrives in the pocket, so it's going to happen. But that number is rather high. It's really, really, really high.
To your point just now, before we kind of shift, that is actually one of the reasons why I don't find I can blame Teddy Bridgewater for not hooking up with Noah Fant more. Because, like, if Noah Fant is getting open on routes that are worth throwing to, Bridgewater would be throwing to him.
Yeah.
The problem is that Fant's being asked to chip a lot. And he's being basically a tertiary receiver. He's dump off guy, that's like what he's been doing. But that's one of the reasons why when people look at the numbers from Pittsburgh, everybody's lost their mind about the fact that Noah Fant wasn't seeing the ball. That was a big part of it.
Yeah, and there was a big part of that last year too, where it almost felt like they was like, oh, here Noah Fant to the flat. That's your check down, if need be. And they weren't using him right. And again, is that a Shurmur thing? Is that a quarterback thing? Is that an offensive line thing? Because they've not been able to figure out the right tackle spot. Yep. It's a combination of all three for me. Like, it just it sucks because Noah Fant's potential could be like a top 10 tight end easily.
He should
easily
be.
But he's just not getting the production, even though I think he's getting open a fair amount. It's just I think they need to be better about building around him because right now, you could make an argument he's their best skill position player. With Judy out, you can make that argument.
So kind of from there, this is kind of where I want to kind of move to, and then we'll probably end after this, is because I know I'm keeping you guys, so I apologize. The NFL trade deadline, it falls on November 2nd this year. The Broncos have 3 games before the trade deadline, but they play the Raiders on Sunday. They turn around, they play the Browns on Thursday Night Football. So they have 2 games in 4 days, and then they have a little bit of a lull before the next game and then the deadline. With that mini bye, that kind of puts the Broncos in this situation where if you come out of these 2 games, somehow 5-2, you could theoretically be a buyer at the trade deadline. Because if you're trying to compete with the heavyweights, it could make sense to go after a veteran linebacker, maybe get receiver help. If anybody's selling stuff, you know, you could pick stuff up. Jacksonville might trade Miles Jack at some point. I doubt it, but I'd be interested for sure. But on the other side of that coin, if the Broncos drop these next 2 games, they're 3-4 with a mini bye, which makes sense that if you're going to sell pieces, the guys that are left can have a little bit of extra practice time to try and step into that new role. Again, I'm not advocating for either side of this. That does look like a distinct possibility, especially when George Payton is in the first year of his tenure. So he's going to be able to do whatever thinking long-term. Whereas if he wants to strip it down, he could. Yeah. So I guess my first question to you guys is, do you think the Broncos make the playoffs? Because that's kind of, because that's the first part of this argument, I think. Because, like, let's say the Broncos win one of these 2 games. Then it's kind of on Payton to decide, am I going to kind of hold ship and try and do what we can with this year? Because the Broncos currently have 27 players on their active roster that are on expiring deals. And that's not counting guys that are on IR right now. So Bradley Chubb, I know with the 5th-year option, he's not expiring. But you have guys like that as well. Josie Jewell, guys like that. But 27 players are on expiring deals. Some of those guys probably won't be back. So this is kind of a 1-year window. So looking at what we've seen through the first 5 games, do you think this Broncos team will make the playoffs?
I don't know. Will make is tough. Definitively saying will make, I don't know if I can be there right now. I think they have a decent shot with the other teams that'll be competing for that 7th spot. They're going to be in competition for that 7th spot, whether it's with the Colts, the Raiders, the Bengals, the Steelers. There's going to be decent competition for that 7th spot. I don't think it's going to be as strong as it was last year where the Colts were 11-5 taking that 7th spot, but I do think there's going to be some decent competition. It's very, very interesting. Like you said, there's a lot of players in expiring deals, but is 3-4 a record where you're comfortable selling, you know? And I think the 3 of us, we can look at that away from the team, just disjointed from an organization, and say, sell. You know, if you lose to this Raiders team, sell. Easy.
Yeah.
It's nice and easy. But it's a lot tougher when you're in the building, you're around all these players, and, you know, to tell them, hey, at 3-4, we don't think you're good enough to make the playoffs. That's a tough sell. It is.
Yeah.
And you're basically giving up on this coaching staff too. If you're saying we're going to be selling, because, you know, this coaching staff could be in a 1-year window as well, where if they don't make the playoffs, there's major changes there as well. So it's very, very tough. I'm inclined to say, even if they are at 3-4, we probably won't see too much of a sell. Maybe a veteran or something like that. Like, I don't even want to say like a Bryce Callahan or something, because that's a good player that you'd be trading away. And again, for a 3-4 team, trading away a good player, it's a tough sell for your organization. So I don't know. I think they're going to be a team that's good enough to have a chance at making the playoffs. I legitimately think they do. And honestly, I could even say them, the Steelers, and even though the Bengals look good, I'd probably put the Colts above them in terms of make the playoffs, just with the Colts having so many easy games down the stretch. But you know, it's going to be that race to 9-10 wins, I think, with those teams. And I think the Broncos probably have the inside track along with, like, the Steelers. But it is a tough situation. If you're sitting at 5-2, do you go all out? If you're sitting at 3-4, do you sell? I don't know. But I do feel more confident in saying I think it's more likely that they, you know, would trade and try to add more guys than they would sell. Because the worst record you're going to have is 3-4. And I just don't think that's a record where you really are convinced to sell. You can convince that locker room that we're going to sell.
Yeah, to me, the tough part would be, like, if they lose to the Raiders, but then they turn around and beat the Browns on Thursday. Because the Browns are shorthanded. Like, if you look at their injury report against this game against the Cardinals, it's long. It's huge. And they're going to have to turn around and play Thursday as well. So we don't know the health of them. So with how Baker Mayfield has kind of played, it's been varied. It's been inconsistent. Like, that could be a trap game if Fangio's in his bag against the Browns. Like, we just don't know. But if you lose to the Raiders and then beat the Browns, who are a good team, then you're kind of like, how do we feel long term? Yeah. And then they have Washington, and Washington right now is struggling. They don't really have they don't have the defense we thought they would. They don't have a quarterback that we thought they would. It's not really there for them. And the Broncos, if they put that one away, like they should, that's right before the deadline. You're kind of sitting here going, okay, well, we lost to a team we shouldn't have. We beat a team we probably shouldn't have. That's a little shorthanded, but we still beat them. And then we beat a team that we should have taken care of, like we did early on in the season. You know, then you're like, I don't know the direction of this team.
Yep.
Because it's a – but the thing is the Broncos, I think, like, four of their last games, they have the Chargers and Chiefs.
Yeah. Yep.
Like in a row. Like, that's
tough. That
that's
to me –
really tough. And if you're trying to contend, like, nobody else plays the Chargers and Chiefs in the last few weeks. Like – and so if you're not feeling like this team can make the playoffs, you probably should sell. But what happens if you don't sell and you drop all those games and you're out of the playoffs? And then you're kind of screwed. And so it's like right now you just don't have a clue.
That to me is what's making the Broncos I don't envy George Payton right now, just because. Yeah. From the first week of the season, we heard that the Broncos felt really good about their cornerback room. Teams were calling them about it. We're now quickly getting to this point where Michael Ojemudia is supposed to be back. At some point, Ronald Darby is probably going to – he might very well play against the Raiders. They may at some point get Duke Dawson and Sangbassi back. You know, don't count on it, but maybe. But they have too many corners, or they're about to have too many corners. So I think if they do make a move – the move that makes the most sense, and I'm not saying I'm advocating for it, but it's something that AJ touched on, is trading Kyle Fuller. If you can get something decent for Fuller, you slide Sertan into that spot. Darby takes back over where he was, and you kind of roll with it. But if you're 5-2, I think it's hard to trade anybody, because at that point you're trying to chase the Super Bowl. Then I know it might seem like a pipe dream because Teddy Bridgewater, but that's the hope. But at the same time, I want to push back a little bit on this, Zach, is if you fall to 3-4, knowing that you have the Chiefs, the Chargers twice, and the Raiders again, if I'm George Payton, that's tough. Because, like, if you can't beat the Raiders, the Browns, the Steelers, it's hard to argue that you're going to beat the Chargers or the Chiefs at all. In your most honest moment with yourself, I think I would look at in the mirror and say, I don't think this is the year. And then if you're George Payton at that point, it's, well, I'm like, his job security depends more on outside factors than what he's actually doing this year, as long as he doesn't completely blow it. Because with the Broncos ownership situation, that's what's going to determine his job more than anything, in my mind. So he could feasibly argue with himself that if I suddenly have his giant cash or draft picks, the new owner might be really happy with me, because now we can go chase a quarterback, we can do whatever. Because right now the Broncos don't have any extra ammo.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
That pick from Trinity Benson.
So oh yeah, I forgot. Sorry, that. I forgot about the fifth round pick. I apologize. Sorry, yeah, dear listeners. How dare I?
I was gonna jump in and say, as AJ was talking, I did think, Kyle Fuller makes the most sense. Yeah. Even if they are, 5-2, you probably don't make a trade. But if you're 4-4 or whatever, 3-4, whatever the record is at the deadline, Kyle Fuller makes the most sense, because he was a 1-year signing. in the offseason, doesn't have the connections in the locker room, has struggled, and then you have your young first-round pick right behind him. So that does make sense. And you would probably get a good enough pick where you can kind of justify the trade. Not saying he's going to get like a second-round pick, but you can definitely justify that trade if it's a third or a fourth or whatever. But I
heard that Justin Tucker might go for a first-round pick today, though, so...
That's a thing going around.
Daniel Jeremiah said he talked to somebody in the NFL who asked him if any teams would trade a first round pick for Justin Tucker. And I'm bringing this up because I know that you love kickers, Zach.
Yeah, that's part of your brand, Zach. We know you're a big kickers guy.
I will always say, this is what I do say to people is all kickers suck and don't matter except for Justin Tucker. But even then, I'm not trading a first-round pick for kicker.
I think that's a quick way to get fired.
Look, all kickers suck. They don't matter. They're the worst. But I'm not trading – except for Justin Tucker, but I'm not trading a first for him. Like, Justin Tucker is the only exception just because he's that much better than every other kicker in the last decade that has played in this league. But no, not a first-round pick for a kicker. No.
To me, I touched on this in the Kyle Fuller piece was like, I mainly hit on like the significance of the trade asset versus the trade off. Cause it's like Kyle, you know, corners don't fetch a high price.
Nope.
Stephon Gilmore just went for a sixth round pick. Yeah. I don't even think it was in 2022. I think it was a 2023 sixth round pick. And that's 2 years removed from his defensive player of the year. Like, I think the only corner that's gone for a first round pick in the last decade was Jalen Ramsey.
Yep.
And the second rounder, I think, was Cromartie. I think that's what I wrote, was Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah.
Like, or Marcus Peters went for one, I think. And then before him was Antonio Cromartie in like 2013. Like they just don't fetch a high price. And so you're going. At the deadline, if the Broncos are kind of mixed, you're kind of going, is a third and a sixth or a third and a fifth, whatever, a third and some day three change, is it worth having that personnel in the secondary of being able to have Fuller and Surtain and Darby and Callahan? Is it worth passing on that for a third round pick and change? And that's tough. You know, as a regime, if you don't feel like you're going to make it, yeah, you'll take whatever you can get. But if you're kind of mixed, what do you do?
Yep.
And that's the problem with Kyle Fuller being your main trade asset, just because his position doesn't fetch a high price anymore.
Yep. So my hope, personally, is that the Broncos kick the Raiders' ass, that they blow out the Browns on Thursday Night Football, and that they take care of business against Washington, and we don't have to worry about it.
Well, then they blow out everybody else on their schedule and win the Super Bowl.
Like, 15-2, that's 15-2 until we aren't. Yeah. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, realistically, we have to kind of touch on, like, because, again, this is a turning point week in a lot of ways, guys, and it's by the time we're kind of, like, catching our breath and kind of taking stock of where things are, we'll be at the deadline. So this is kind of the time where I think it's worth kind of looking at where are things moving. So, but that's why I had to have you guys on. I wanted to kind of touch on things, kind of see where things are at 5 weeks in. I think in a lot of ways, expectations are kind of like the crux of a lot of the pain going on in Broncos country right now. I don't blame anybody. Again, I've been pretty disappointed with some of the stuff that's gone on. But I think better days ahead if people get their poop in a group. But I just want to say
that's the first time I've ever heard that in my life.
Same.
I'm happy to bring that to you. That's I'm going to put a trademark on that one. But again, guys, if you don't already follow Zach and AJ on Twitter, you need to. Again, I assume if you're listening to my podcast, you guys love good Broncos coverage. These are two of the best people out there covering the Broncos. AJ's work is at Mile High Report. You can find him on Twitter at AJ Draft Scout. Zach's work is over at Sports Illustrated. He covers the Colts and the Broncos. He is the lead analyst for Sports Illustrated's Colts coverage. And then he is also a film guy for Mile High Huddle. He does a lot of work with quarterbacks. So if you're wondering what's going on with Teddy Bridgewater, you need to follow Zach.
somehow I became the quarterback guy. I don't know how it happened, but it's whatever. I get paid the same. I'm the quarterback guy now for both sites somehow.
But yeah, so thank you so much for joining me, guys. It was a lot of fun.